It was a little larger than the clenched fist of a grown man, shining in the shadows of the old store. Ryan stared at what the crystal contained. It was the severed head of an adult prairie rattler, jaws gaping as though it were about to strike. The flat eyes stared blankly out of the clear glass. They took it outside where the brilliant sun danced off the polished surface. Doc and Lori were on the far side of the street, and Ryan called them over.
Oh, can I be having it, Doc? Please? If Ryan and Christy doesn't want it, can I?
Let me see it. Oh, no. Too heavy, child. By the three Kennedys. This brings back memories of such places. It's beautiful, is it not? When I was here back in my first days here, there was a saloon up near Chinle. The barkeep had a large glass bell jar on the counter with a live rattler in there. Big son of a bitch, if you'll pardon my French, friends. Anyway, this man offered a $5 bet that you couldn't lay your hand on the outside of this jar and hold it there, eyes open, watching the snake. It will always strike at the hand. But you never knew when. It might be 5 seconds, might be 5 minutes. When it did, the speed and venom was so scary that you just had to take your hand off the glass. Couldn't help yourself. Guy made a lot of dough that way from greenhorn suckers. Myself included, to tell the truth.
To Lori's sadness, he pitched the crystal ball down into one of the numerous gulches running off the street. Christy and Ryan continued up their side, peering through cracked windows that were smothered in spider webs. A sign painted on the glass of the front window revealed what the next building had once been. It read, Old Zeke's Rock Shop. All welcome. The lock on the front door had been smashed in and dangled rust red from a broken iron staple. The place looked as if it had been deliberately wrecked. The tables were overturned, and the glass display cases on the back wall were splintered. The floor was littered with piles of ordinary rocks, but if there had ever been anything of real worth, it was long stolen. Christy pushed with the toe of her boot at a heap of rectangular cards. Each one had a name, neatly printed with a firm italic hand.
Uncle Tyus McCann knew rocks and stones and all their names. I recognized some of them. When I was a sprat, I loved them. Uncle Tyus would recite them like they were the names of famous heroes.
She bent and picked up the cards, reading them, and then flicking them away to float in the dusty motes that drifted lazily along the spears of sunlight. Ryan listened. He knew nothing of either gemstones or heroes, but he admitted to himself that the name sounded good from Christie's lips.
Onyx, jasper, opals, and carnelian. Oh, I'd love to have come to this place when it was still filled with all of them. Oh, turquoise and malachite.
A stray beam of hazy light bounced off something in the corner, near the bolted back door. Ryan's first reaction was to guess it was one of the shards of broken glass. He walked across and picked up a small, smooth stone. It was roughly circular, polished, and gleaming black. He wiped it on his jacket.
Nice.
It's obsidian.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Know what they used to call these in the old days?
No, what?
Apache tears.
Near the top end of the main street, there was an adobe house, better preserved than any of the wooden shacks. A wrought iron shingle swung there, as neat as when it had been hung more than a century past. Portrait photographs, old-style pics.
Hey, come see Double Stoops.
JB was there first, fedora tugged low over his eyes against the harsh sun. Ryan and Christy were joined by Doc and Lori. The old man was looking fatigued by the extreme heat, leaning on the girl's arm for support on the steep, rutted slope. The gray cat was parading up and down on the windowsill, back arched.
Looking here. Must be crazy, Mutie's clothes like damn.
The door to the store stood open, the entrance step piled high with driven sand. Ryan glanced inside and saw that the place had been stripped of furniture. The walls, however, were still covered with rows of pictures. They were all sizes, all tinted light brown, all showing stiffly posed people, wearing the kind of clothes that Ryan had only seen in vids set in the Old West days. Long dresses and parasols and stiff collars and tall hats.
Come and pose. 15 minutes only. Complete satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Show your friends how you might have looked 100 years ago. Try on anything that takes your fancy, mayor or gunman, Women's Purity League or whore. You got the fantasy and we got the camera.
Look at them, so silly.
Doc came to the front of the group, shading his eyes with his hand. He stooped to look at a large framed picture that held pride of place in the middle of the photographer's window. There was a young woman seated in an ornate armchair with golden cherubs carved along its arms. Her hair was knotted back, and she wore a wide-brimmed hat with a trim of osprey feathers. Her dress was dark velvet and pinched at the waist. A cameo brooch clipped the blouse together at her slender white throat. A tall man stood behind her, one hand upon her shoulder, smiling down at her with an unaffected look of pride and love. His hair was parted down the middle and pomaded back. A luxuriant mustache curled around his lips. The frock coat was light gray, with darker piping around the lapels. A heavy gold chain drooped across his stomach, carrying a seal and a Masonic emblem. A little hideaway Derringer 22 was tucked discreetly into the top of his striped pants, showing its pearl butt. He held a stovepipe hat in his beringed right hand.
Never seen nothing more triples to. Nobody ever looked like that.
Doc turned away, face stricken as if he had just witnessed the moment of his own death.
God help me, friends. That is... could be. It is like my dearest Emily and myself.
Tears began to flow, and he walked off, back ramrod stiff. Laurie looked at Jack as if she were going to spit in his face. Then she spun on her heel and dashed after Doc.
What's wrong? Just joking about...
Those people, Jack. They're wearing the kind of clothes Doc and his wife wore when he was alive in the 1890s, before those bastards trawled him. It just made him recall things he'd want to forget.
Oh, I didn't think. I'll go say sorry and tell Doc how...
Later, Jack. Do it later.
It took a couple of hours for Ryan, helped by the armorer, to wreck the whole of Sometime Never, concentrating on the trails in and out. There were several places ideal for an ambush.
We'll send word for a peace council here. They'll look for a trap, but we'll hit them on the way in. I can come back and pick the best place a couple of days before the meet.
Sounds good.
You reckon this General Yellow Hair will guess it's a trick?
Bound to, Ryan. Sneaky sect leader like that isn't able to think straight anymore.
Ryan looked around the scattered shacks, most of them in the last stages of decrepitude.
Must have been a good place to live, once.
Most places were.
It was getting time to head back. The cavalry didn't patrol towards Sometime Never very often, knowing the Apache kept away from the gulch. But it was as well to ride safely into Drowned Squaw Canyon before dusk crept over the desert. From where he stood, Ryan was able to look clear down the steep valley. Jack was sitting on a porch with steps lightly moon, stroking the cat. Doc and Laurie were sitting together by a tumbled heap of timber that had once been called the Crazy Shack. J.B. was pitching pebbles at a metal sign 30 yards away across the street, rattling it with 9 shots out of 10. He couldn't see Christy and guessed she was still exploring some of the fascinating relics of the Ghostville. His own eye had been caught by a stone-walled shack near the Adobe Photo Store, but on the opposite side of the street. Loops of rusting barbed wire were festooned around it, and a sign fashioned out of the bottoms of green bottles, stuck in clay, read Copperhead Row. Ryan climbed cautiously up the slippery slope of loose stones, past a couple of handmade signs, both fallen and faded. He tried to make out the wording, but all he could read was a warning to keep out of the patch of land around the cabin. Unusually, the door to the hut was made from sheet steel, fixed in a sturdy wooden frame. Metal shutters covered the windows. Ryan strolled around the curious building, puzzled at the security. More puzzled that it didn't seem to have been breached at all. Yet the state of the main bolts and hinges showed that a determined child could have pushed his way in.
What have you found, lover?
Fire blast. You shouldn't creep around like that. Get yourself chilled one of these days.
Copperhead Row? What's that mean? And how come it's still shut up tight as a duck's ass?
I love it when you talk dirty. I figure this has to be the shack that the Apaches talked about. The lone crazy who liked some country singer lived here at the end. The man, they say, haunts the bill.
The ghost town ghost, you mean? Could be. If it's bolted up and locked from the inside, then it looks like...
The ghost's still there. Let's see. He braced himself, then kicked out, his combat boot shattering the main lock. The door swung open, revealing a dusty box of utter darkness, blacker than the wing feathers of a raven. Christy pushed by him, pausing on the threshold and pulling a face.
Ugh! Something bad in here, lover. Long gone dead.
I'll break off a couple of the shutters to give us some light. Don't go in. It might be booby-trapped. Ryan wrenched away two of the shutters, then eagerly rejoined Christy to check out the interior. The woman was poised by an inner door, surrounded by swirling motes of dust, the bursts of sunlight giving her a halo. She looked staggeringly beautiful, and Ryan felt a wave of love sweep over him. Christy pushed open the door. Ryan heard something peculiar. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught the glint of metal, a huge axe with a curved edge, swinging toward Christy's skull.
Christy!
Ryan's shoulder caught Christy just above the knees, projecting her across the far room like a grin from a launcher. She landed on her side, coming up with her blaster in her hand, the silvered finish glowing with light in the dimness.
What the hell, Ryan? Why did you...
Words failed her as she looked behind Ryan and saw the swinging pendulum of the huge axe blade hissing through the air. It reached its apogee, hung frozen for a moment, then plunged into its lethal arc once more. She holstered the 9mm pistol, then stood to brush herself down. She offered a hand to Ryan, who was still lying on the floor.
Thanks, lover.
Sure. Crazy bastard didn't want nobody creeping in on him. Ryan examined the mechanism of the booby trap, which had a simple switch trigger and a waxed fishing line coiled on a spring under tension. A second switch released the axe head. Ryan touched it with his index finger, finding it still keen enough to slice through silk.
He's still here, Ryan.
Christy pointed to a dust-muffled shape on the truckle bed against the far wall of the hut. An antique disc player stood by the bed, and a table by the window held a dozen empty liquor bottles. A heavy Smith & Wesson automatic, loaded, was on top of some frail, curling magazines, all dated from the year 2000. Sitting next to the leg of the bed was a stack of extremely old CDs. From the jewel case inserts, the illustrations so faded they were almost transparent, Ryan saw that the CDs were all by the same artist, with several copies of the same CD. The man's name was Steve Earle, and his CDs had titles like Copperhead Road, Exit Zero, The Hard Way, and Shut Up and Die Like an Aviator.
Copperhead Road, like the name of the cabin. Now I'm sure this is that loner they were talking about.
Ryan turned as he heard the others arriving outside the shack. Despite his injuries, Jack was first, with the fleet-footed girl panting behind him.
Very bad medicine here, home of all the spirits who do evil in this place.
Ryan pointed to the leathery corpse on the bed.
There's your evil spirit, a lonely old man who lived here and died here. That's all there is.
Dust had settled in the empty, sunken eye sockets, and the mouth hung dryly open. The hands were coiled shut against the palms. The cotton dungarees had rotted away as the corpse decomposed, and the bones thrust through at the knees and elbow.
Come on, let's go.
Ryan was the last to leave. He pulled the outer door shut behind him, wedging it with a large stone, so the remains wouldn't be disturbed by coyotes or any of the other desert scavengers. The war council that night took place in one of the wiki-ups around a smoking fire. The sky had lowered around dusk, and deep purple chem clouds, streaked with chrome yellow, brought a rising wind and pounding rain. For several minutes, hailstones pounded the Box Canyon, bouncing off the boulders, and the temperature dropped 20 degrees in 2 minutes. They all ate a fiery bean stew, helping themselves with old metal spoons, marked with the name Holiday Inn. After they'd finished eating, Ryan and JB stayed behind, while the others went to their own huts. Cuchillo Oro stayed, as well as two of his most senior warriors, Fights Two Lions and Stones in Face.
You guarantee it will work, Ryan Calder?
Fireblast, Cuchillo. How the fuck can I say that? I've seen some of the best plans ever made fall apart just because someone chose the wrong moment to fart. How can I know?
But it is a good plan.
Best we got.
If Yellowhair catches the scent of betrayal, then he will escape the trap. He will be angered and will come and burn us from our home.
Old men fear life. If one never risks the danger of the hunt, then one will finally starve.
Look, we send the message to the fort saying we want peace. Not from me, but from your people. Offer a meet in 3 days from now, and sometime never. Say there'll only be Kuchiyo Oro and one other warrior. Ask for the general and one Sekman to come. They'll try treachery.